this Saturday night, we have a huge Naval Special Warfare Foundation fundraiser.
Man, look at that foundation fundraiser. It's
at
huge.
At the home of Craig Irving in Point Loma. And, I mean, it's like 500 people. It's completely sold out. We're still looking for corporate dollars if you want to support the SEALs and their families. And you can contact us directly at our email, and we'll hook you up with everybody. But it all got started with this guy, with Marcus Luttrell. When so many local business people here in San Diego read about Marcus Luttrell and read The Lone Survivor, they went, we got to do something. And raising money for their families has become a really big deal in San Diego. And here is Marcus Luttrell back on the Scott and BR show via the Corky's Hotline. Marcus, good morning and welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Marcus, where are you this morning? Because I recall last time we spoke, you were in like Florida rehabbing. You and your twin brother were rehabbing at the time.
Yes, sir. No, I'm back out at the ranch now. I got home a few days ago. So I'm just kind of catching up out here. I mean, if you're not working every day out on a ranch, then you're just being lazy because there's always something to do.
Now,
so you're not really kicking back and relaxing. You're on the ranch and you're back working again.
Yes, sir. Yeah. But I mean, that in itself is kind of therapeutic, man. It's got in the middle of nowhere, and it's pretty nice, actually.
Now, let me just back everybody up for those that maybe have not read the book. Which, by the way, Marcus, I don't know if you keep track of book sales, do you? I mean, does the publisher ever call you and say, hey, you're doing really well right now or anything?
Yes, sir. I get every now and again, I told them it's not really that important to me. It's kind of funny when Lone Survivor went number one, I had my phone turned off. I was out bass fishing, and I came back in, there was a lot of messages and stuff like that, and I called in there. I was like, what's going on? What's so important? Like, you know, Lone Survivor went number one, this, that, and the other. And I was like, man, that's great. But you ought to see the size of this bass I just caught out here. You know, they do. It's a big deal to them and to that community. And it is to me, too. You know, I mean, I'm happy that everyone's, getting the message and reading about it and knowing just what happened to us out there. And it opens a lot of people's eyes about what's going on. In the war, so it's doing its job. You know, the reason the teams wanted to get the story out there was to make sure no one could make anything up or
Right, you didn't want the media you didn't want the media to report on it. You wanted to actually give a firsthand experience of what happened to you guys out in those mountains of Afghanistan. The reason I ask about the book is because we've had more people, even still, every day I'll get a message on Facebook, and what's the name of that book again? Yeah. I got to read that book again. And even at one point during Christmas time, one of the guys went to try and buy the book at the bookstore, and the guy at the bookstore told him, we're sold out of that book. And, you know, I don't know if it was because of your stories on the air, people went out and ran out and got it, but it's a hard book to find all of a sudden. So the book Lone Survivor is this story about Marcus Luttrell and his three buddies. And these Navy SEALs go out into the mountains of Afghanistan, and literally before they know it, they are under siege from, I don't know, Marcus, I don't know if you know the numbers. I mean, was it 200? Was it 300 Taliban fighters?
Intel reported up to 200 fighters, yeah.
And the word is that you guys were able to knock out almost half of their forces. Is that right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, kill or injure. Yeah.
Yeah, four guys who, and I'm never really sure we got into the mindset of what made you guys really honestly believe that the four of you were going to take down all 200 of them.
Well, when you get into a situation like that, I mean, you really don't concentrate. I mean, it's not like we sat back in the initial and got a head count, you know. Once you get into something like that and that deep, you're pretty much focusing on the guy. Our guys in front of you, you know what I mean? Just the guys that are engaging you. So you don't really worry about the number. And since that kind of never ended, and, you know, every time you hit somebody and they'd go down or they'd move out, then another guy would take his spot. You just focus on that. And once they moved around us and came up behind us and had us in that 360-degree pin, then you were constantly moving and shooting. And it was just a matter of, you know, watching the guy on the right and the left of you, make sure he had cover fire, and then ultimately taking out the guy in front of you. So the numbers didn't really register until afterwards when you saw how many were laying down there, and then the total body count came back in, you know, because you can see those guys. They'd have to consolidate their numbers and come in and drag their guys off. You know, guys would be screaming for help and stuff like that. Which, in the long run, it was more beneficial for us to wound a guy than it was to hit a guy with that many guys against us, because, you know, he'd be over there screaming for help and this and the other. It'd take two or three guys offline just to go over there and drag him out of there, instead of just if you killed a guy, he would just, you know, they just bypass him and they'd keep fighting. So. Yeah, it just, you know, after a few hours of doing that, though, I mean, we just got so tired. That's kind of when it was kind of popping in your head. You're like, good Lord, man, you know, I wonder if they're going to take a break or if they're just going to run out of guys. That never happened.
Yeah, you don't get a chance to call timeout. But it's interesting that you mentioned you find that it's better for your side if you wound them as opposed to kill them, because then their guys have to come and drag them away. I mean, do you guys then go out to wound the guys, or you just take any shot you can get?
No, initial is to kill.
Yeah.
You just want to kill them all. I mean, point for that is because there were so many of them, it just worked. It just seemed like it was more beneficial in that doing it that way. In the long run, I mean, I'd much rather kill one of them than wound one of them, but, you know, that's kind of a theory of war anyways.
Yeah.
You know, it takes more people to tend to somebody who's wounded than it does to tend to somebody who's dead. I mean, that goes back generations in war fighting. That's why they come up with the landmines, the little bounce embedded and stuff like that. A lot of those things are designed just to wound a soldier instead of killing them.
Yeah. I just want to clarify, I didn't mean like a flesh wound. I meant a wound that was going to get really nasty later on and it would, you know, probably, you know, just take this guy out. But you know.
Right, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I want to make that clear.
I wouldn't shoot for a guy. Yeah, no, yeah, exactly. I mean, every shot counted was to definitely to kill a guy. But yeah, I wouldn't shoot somebody in the toe or anything. I guess.
Not Jack Bauer style.
He shot me in the toe.
Yeah. Marcus Luttrell, the book, The Lone Survivor. Just to back up to where we started here this morning, Marcus. Oh. I know we're going to spend a little bit more time, but Marcus says he's on his ranch in Texas doing work now. When it's assumed that Marcus, along with the three other SEALs, are dead in the mountains of Afghanistan, there's all these people that are having this impromptu vigil at his parents' ranch. And ultimately, when Marcus is found alive, there was a guy who his family did not know who came to just be there at their family residence as there were hundreds of people congregating, barbecuing, drinking beer, hanging out, waiting for word. And when it was all said and done, this is where in the book I lost my whole deal. I lost it here. The guy says to Marcus's mom, "What can I do for this guy? I want to do something special for this guy." So when he gets home, something's done. The guy had a construction company, and it was like that show on ABC. What's that show called where they build people homes? This guy shows up with all these construction workers, they built him this crazy house on his family's property because his mom was like, "Yeah, well, his dream is to one day build a house over here." Is that the home where we find you this morning, Marcus?
Yeah, I'm sitting in it right now. You know, it's you know, that kind of blew me away when I got home. It was really nice. I mean, it's, you know, it was an old what it was a feed to hold the tag and the feed. You know, it's big enough. It's got a TV on the wall, and then all four walls are surrounded by memorabilia. Any SEAL that comes out, there's a pole. Kind of right off to the side by the door, any SEAL that comes in, pins his trident on the wall, and there's, you know, there's plaques. I'm looking around right now. There's plaques everywhere of Red Wing and guys ring out and stop, and, you know, whoever stops by and drops something off. I mean, it doesn't have to be SEALs. I mean, there's flight pins and EOD pins and everything, and then, you know, there's two bedrooms upstairs and a shower. So it's pretty peaceful. I mean, it definitely brings back a lot of memories. When you walk in here, you know it's designed for something. I mean, something like that, because every wall is covered with something.
Right, so, from Operation Red Wing, which is what it was called. As Marcus describes it in the book, I mean, him and these SEALs are in this helicopter, man, and they are getting ready to be dropped off in the middle of the mountains of Afghanistan, and they know that this is going to be a really nasty, dangerous situation. They got nothing to hide behind. And little did they know when they came up on these goat herders, and they probably should have killed these guys. As Marcus has told us, the reason they didn't was twofold. Number one, They didn't want to do what these other SEALs are now going through, where they're being accused as being murderers, essentially. And number two, all these goat were going to roam around free, and the Taliban fighters were going to know something was going on. We'll pick it up with Marcus Luttrell coming right back. Marcus, hold on for one sec, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right. Oh, God, I can't. This guy is just too much. He's just. I want to talk about one other part with him, which is when he's crawling and fighting and trying to find a way to survive out there after his three SEAL teammates have already been killed, and he knows. 7:21 in the morning, more with the lone survivor, Marcus Luttrell, coming up on Scott and BR.
Double X1090.
7:25 in the morning on the Scott and BR show. Marcus Luttrell, the lone survivor, will rejoin us here in a matter of seconds. This Saturday night, San Diego deploys at the home of Craig and Rebecca Irving in Point Loma. It's an event to benefit the Naval Special Warfare Foundation. If you would like to help Naval SEAL families, guys who've been killed in combat, guys who've been injured, guys whose families could use your help, we are still looking for corporate dollars to come on out. I mean, it's going to be a huge event. 500 people, completely sold out. I wonder if Marcus is going to be in town on Saturday night. Man, would I love him to sit at our table. Wouldn't that be great? Marcus Luttrell, the lone survivor, is back on the Scott and BR show. Marcus, any chance you're going to be in San Diego Saturday night?
No, sir. My, you know, Mother's Day Sunday, and Navy SEAL or not, you don't miss Mother's Day. She strapped a whooping on you, so I, you know, I would have loved to have made it, though. I mean, that's real important, you know, especially helping out Naval Special War Foundation, because they do a lot of great things. I'm a big advocate of their foundation.
Why don't we fly you in on Saturday, fly you home on Sunday, so Mom doesn't strap a whooping on you? Come on, man. Come on out. You know, say again?
What time is it going down?
Well, it's going to be Saturday night. Everything gets started at 5, and then there's dinner, and there's a featured speaker, which, by the way, we'll cancel him and we'll put you in. And and then we'll fly you out first thing Sunday morning. We'll get you back home. Come on, man. What do you say? If I could pull that off, would you do it?
I know you could pull it off. That's the thing.
Yeah, we'll have an F-18 pick you up and drop you off. Right. You'll parachute in. Marcus, we had your boy David Goggins in studio last week. Boy, he's another interesting character, huh?
He's probably one of the hardest men I know. Yeah, he's a great guy. We've been friends for a long time.
Goggins tells the story of him and your twin brother jumping out of an airplane, landing, and Goggins looking over at your brother going, "What's your problem, man? What's wrong with you today?" And your brother, your twin, saying, "Something's wrong with Marcus. I can feel it." Have you and your brother obviously have had this conversation, right?
Yes, sir. They were together when all this went down.
And your twin brother knew all along, he says, kind of a telepathic twin thing, that, yeah, there's something wrong, but Marcus is not dead.
Right. Yes, sir.
So, okay, the three other Navy SEALs, they're all laying dead now in the mountains of Afghanistan, and I shouldn't just call them the three others. I should call them by their names. Matthew Axelson, Michael Murphy, and Danny Dietz. All three of these guys are now, they're dead in the mountains of Afghanistan. Can you just explain to us how long it takes from the time you realize you're on your own until the time you work your way into this small Afghanistani mountain village?
The gunfight started about mid-morning, and then once that thing went down, it lasted pretty much all day into the afternoon. And then once I lost all three guys, it's not like it happened all at once either. I mean, we didn't fall within an hour of each other. First guy we lost was Danny, and then we kept going, pushing down the mountain, and then it was me, Mike, and Axe, and then. We lost Mikey, and Mikey was I don't know how it worked out this way, but I happened to be with every one of them besides Mikey. He and I were separated by about, I don't know how far it was when he was out on that boulder making that sack call, and I couldn't get back to him. And once I knew he was dead, I turned around and pushed down, then I was with Axe. This was about an hour or so after we lost Mikey. We lost Danny first, and then I guess about it's hard for me to keep time, but I think about 2 hours went by, and then after Mikey, it was another hour and some change probably, and when Axe and I were together. And then once we lost him, That's when I crawled in the side of that mountain and buried myself. I was bleeding to death. I was dying. And, you know, Taliban were everywhere, so I didn't really move. And then as the sun went down, when I got up and started moving, that was well into the night. I just moved all along. That was pretty much the longest night of my life, because crawling up and down that mountain, I kept falling, stuff like that. It was real tough for me to move. And then the sun came up. Once the sun came up, I got shot by those three guys. And then I crawled about another 4.5 miles after that. So I finally went up in the village. I think it must have been around noon.
All right, so this is like, we're talking, you know, 24 to 30 hours after the original gunfight starts.
32 hours, yeah.
Yeah, and they take you in. I mean, do you come crawling into this village and everybody goes, oh, my God, there's a guy bleeding to death out here? I mean, is it like that?
I actually fell down this hill. I found this waterfall, and I couldn't reach it. I could hit it with the buttstock of my gun. And, you know, I was kind of licking it like a lollipop, trying to get some water, but that wasn't working. You know, because all night long, man, I was, you know, I'd work up a good sweat and then wring my sock out in my mouth just to get something in there, you know, drinking my own urine and all that crap, digging in the ground. But then once I had this novel idea that, you know, like you see in movies, you just slide down on this hill on my butt, man, and I just took off. And I reached over to grab this tree, and it kind of flipped me upside down. I did this header down this hill. And took flight, landed in the water, into the riverbed, and my knees hit me in the face and knocked me out. And then when I came to, I got two sips out of that water, and then three guys were yelling at me again. And then, long story short, it turned out that's when the villagers heard me fall down that hill. I mean, it was pretty violent, you know. And then picked me up and carried me into the village.
So now you're in the village, and these people are trying to, I mean, they've decided to house you according to the rituals of Afghanistani villages, as I understand it in the book. You know, they've decided to take you in. You're now their property. Taliban hands off. However, the Taliban knows you're there, and they come in, and at least one day, there was a situation where, and we talked about this last time, where there's a young kid, and you can see this young kid, and now the Taliban guys are they torturing you, and this young kid is taking pleasure in watching this?
Yeah, something like that. You know, I really don't talk about that. It's kind of is what it is, you know.
Well, you know,
yeah,
what?
I was laying in there that first day, and they had already taken my clothes off of me and docked me up and put me in those man jammies that they wear, you know, and stuff like that. And I was laying on that on one of those cots inside this room, and that's when the Taliban came in. And that lasted from midday all the way to the next day. And they were coming down there to cut my head off. I asked that kid, I asked one of the villagers, you know, I did signal in, for, you know, kind of gestured to cut my head off. And he was like, yeah.
Let me ask you one question, Marcus. Last time we were on, we talked about this episode where you're in this room, and if the Afghanistani village told the Taliban he's ours, hands off, why were they in there doing to you whatever it was that they were doing to you?
Well, the village elder had come in, but then he had left, and it's pretty much his word is law. But you got to understand that a lot of the Taliban are cousins and brothers and whatever to the village. They live in the village. That's their family. You know, it's not, you know, they use and then. So they can pretty much, it's one of those things where it was on the initial when I first got in there, they weren't sure really what they were going to do with me, whole kind of thing. And it's just speculation, obviously, why you know, I lived through it. But, and once they came in there, it was kind of them, they locked the door and it was just them in there. So it's, you know.
And I'm sure that it's hard to talk about all of this kind of stuff. But it's interesting to me that you've chosen, for whatever reason, to say to us, now this is the second time, and I'm sure you've said it to other people as well, what happened there then, when the door was locked and it was you and how many Taliban guys?
There's 9 of them in there.
What? Why do you not talk about that? Is it too painful to recall it? Why do you choose to say that's one thing that's off limits?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. It's pretty bad. I don't think people need to know about that. I mean, you can use your imagination. I mean, I really don't have to put it into words. Smart. Most people. You know, it's one of those things that happens in war. Just leave it at that.
All this training that SEALs get, and since we've talked the first time, we've met probably five or so different SEALs that have come in studio and told us their experiences, perhaps not in as great a detail. All the SEAL training that you got in Coronado, as that is happening, as this torturous scene is playing out in this Afghanistani village, is it instinct to stay alive? Is it training? What keeps you going?
Yeah, I'd say all of the above. You know, I'm going to lay down there and die. I mean, that's kind of what separates. I mean, I'm not special in any way. You know, I mean, there's any SEAL that they would have put in my spot would have done the same thing to me. You know, it's just the way we are. It's the nature of the job.
Right, but putting you in cold water in Coronado for hours at a time, making you run on the loose sand with logs over your head, keeping you up for a full week in budge training, that's one thing. This is the real deal. Did the training really have you survive?
See, that's the thing. Unless you've gone through it, you can't really get an appreciation for it, but it's pretty horrible. I mean, that from the day one when you walk through budge training, I mean, you just check everything at the door, and all that, you know, wet and sandy, cold water, and all that kind of stuff. It just teaches you to push past the mundane, you know, insignificant stuff. The little details that if you ponder on them, you're gonna die. I mean, you know, a lot of people go to the beach and they get sand in the crease of their shorts or whatever, and that just drives them crazy. They gotta go. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If you can't work past that and focus on the bigger picture, you're gonna die. So that's kind of what the premise of all that is to teach you that all that stuff doesn't really matter. I mean, it's not important. And if you do stop for just one second and focus on that, you're going to die. And not only are you going to die, your teammates are going to die because you're worried about sand in your pants. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's just teaching you that your body can take a hell of a lot more than what you think it can. And each time we pass a phase or finish a training session where they have us in the water or something like that, and you live through it, and say there's a guy who quits, and you just kind of look at him, and you're like, you know what, man, I made it past that. He didn't, you know. You just kind of take that all in. It makes you stronger. Each day you finish budge training, you're stronger mentally and physically.
Marcus, where are we at right now as far as Lone Survivor the movie?
I think next year. As a matter of fact, I talked to Pete, Peter Berg yesterday.
Yeah.
He's the director. And, it's rolling pretty good.
Who plays Marcus Luttrell?
I don't know if I'm allowed to say that yet.
Nice.
Hey, listen. Listen to me.
Oh, try to get it out of him. Yeah, Scott, go ahead.
Hold on a second. Let me tell you how to get it out of Marcus Luttrell. You ready?
Okay.
Let me tell you how. Uh-huh. Peter Berg doesn't tell Marcus Luttrell to do anything in this world. All right, Marcus Luttrell tells Peter Berg what to do. All right, for a guy who's falling down a mountain and knocking himself out, he's been shot 14 times. The guy's bleeding.
Yeah, Peter
to death.
Berg's not telling him anything.
All right, the guy's being tortured by Afghanistani Taliban guys.
We got it.
All right, you do whatever you want to do in this world.
Brilliant.
Okay, you don't take orders from anybody other than the President of the United States of America. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So who's playing Marcus Luttrell?
You know what? Normally that would have worked, but I gave my word. I wouldn't say anything, so.
Oh, are you enjoying that part of it? Are you enjoying the artistic control that they've given you and the contribution you make in this?
You know, it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's definitely entertaining. Going out to LA and seeing how that's a different world. You know, definitely a different world, but. It is fun, you know, seeing how it, you know, I had no idea how, you know, a movie was made. You know, everyone just go to, you can't really appreciate all the detail and the time and effort that these people put into making something like this. It's pretty overwhelming, actually. Hmm. You know, you just go to a movie and watch it, and either you like it or you don't like it, but it's definitely a, and it's a long process, too. You know, I'm kind of... there's a lot of times where I was out there and I was just like, all right, are we going to work today? And like, we did work today, you know, and I'm like, well, we really didn't accomplish anything that I could see, but it's all that behind the scenes kind of stuff, the phone calls and everything like yeah. that they got to set up. So yeah, it's pretty exciting. You know, Pete's, he's a good guy and I think he's going to do, great things, for this, just as long as they stay true to form and don't make it into a love story or, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I marry the village princess or whatever it is.
Right. Now, in the meantime, you guys all remember, by the way, that Peter Berg's name came up on the show last week. Do you remember? Why? Because Peter Berg was Irish Terry Conklin in The Great White Hype.
Right.
Butt whooping, man.
Yeah, butt whooping.
I get on him about that all the time.
You got to be kidding. See, listen, Marcus, I love The Great White Hype. We were talking about last week, and Peter Berg was Irish Terry Conklin.
Yeah. Yeah, he's. I lay that one on him all the time. Cause, you know, when I'm down there, when we go to the gym, he boxes a lot. So, you know, that's what I call him. I call him Terry.
Dude, we got to hook up off the air, and you got to get us Peter Berg to put on the show to talk about the movie Lone Survivor and when it's going to come out and all this other kind of stuff. Really cool. All right, Marcus, listen, again, can't thank you enough for the time this morning and listening to the stories. And really, more than anything, just by putting your story on the air, we're helping raise money for the Naval Special Warfare Foundation, which is going to help Naval SEAL families who are really in need. And so, again, we really do appreciate the time this morning, always. And
yeah, I can't thank y'all enough for doing that. You know, I mean, especially for raising awareness for the NSW Foundation. That's a big deal. And you know, I'm sure can't thank you enough. And for all your listeners and stuff like that, I mean, especially with the way the economy is now and everything like that, I mean, it's just, you know, even if it's not money that's donated, if it's just, you know, a thank you or something like that, that's all that, you know, that we could ask for. And especially raising awareness for my three buddies that were on trial, you know, that's a whole different ball of wax. But
yeah, just real quick on that.
Appreciate all you guys do.
Yeah, you're welcome and thank you. But real quick on that, it bothers me so much to see that Navy SEALs would ever be on trial. And I got to be honest, I really didn't get too deep into it because the story kind of disgusts me. How a Navy SEAL who's in the middle of that kind of combat can ever be put... Listen, that's why, as you describe in the book, Marcus, that's why you guys didn't kill those goat herders when, in all actuality, sad as it may be and as brutal as it may sound, that's
what you should have done.
It's kind of a big screw-up, you know?
Well, I mean, yeah, I said that. I was just, you know, and you got to think, we got guys on trial right now for busting a guy in the chops. What if we'd have killed those two guys? Man, I told you. Yeah, just like I said, they're throwing us under the jail probably, you know? So I don't know. It's tough, man. Just, and I don't know the whole story, you know, obviously. That's the reason I didn't get into it too much. But, you know, thanks for supporting them and backing them up.
That's what you got to do.
It's tough when we, it's kind of being in a charge of something, and that's kind of out of our element. So don't know much about law.
Yeah,
being a lawyer and being, you know, in a court of law.
Nope, you know about being a Navy SEAL. All right, hey, listen, man, thanks a lot. We will definitely be talking to you again soon. Can't wait to get you into San Diego and get you live in the studio. You know.
Right on. Y'all have a good time on Saturday.
All right, we will.
Thanks,
right on.
Marcus.
Thank you.
Yeah, take care.